It's Monday, August 6th, and you're listening to the Geek at Geek News Central, show number 788. Yes, this show is 788, sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com. Our August special for all new and existing GoDaddy customers, save 20% off every order by using promo code GO20OFF2. GO20OFF2. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, folks, I got a great show lined up for you. This is probably going to be one of the most important shows of the year from a content standpoint. So I really want you to pay attention. Got a lot to share. Strap in. Here it comes.
All right, people, I need a go-no-go for the Geek News Central podcast. Digital archive recorders.
We're go fly.
Microphone.
We're go fly.
Video feed.
Go.
Web browser.
Go.
RSS data stream aggregator.
Go fly.
Interflux Toddism suppressor.
All right, I'm confused.
Host readiness check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
The Geek News Central podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to go. Cue Todd in...
5.
Button, who's got the button?
4.
There's no cause for alarm.
3.
Everybody hold on to something.
2.
Just press the button.
1.
It's showtime.
Aloha and welcome to Geek News Central, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii via the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Honolulu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran, and I want to encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all our great content. Of course, check out our archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. When you're over there, it's a piece of cake to get subscribed to the show as well. You'll find information on that. On the second column of the website, just go over there and subscribe via iTunes, via Zoom, via a standard RSS feed to all of our shows, the Chrome Show, Robot Underpants, Gadget Professor, Saturday Morning Tech, our special media events, and of course, this show, Geek News Central, produced both in audio and in video. Of course, everyone, I want to welcome you to the show. And those of you that are new to the podcast, thanks for being here. Thanks for hanging out. For those of you that have been longtime members of the show or just recently joined the show, thanks for being part of the Ohana here and joining the family. It's greatly appreciated that you're with us and subscribed. I definitely appreciate it. So I want to make sure, of course, that you can always reach out to me if you feel you need to do so. And it's real easy via Twitter at Geek News. Of course, the email address for the show is geeknews@gmail.com, and our hotline is 619-342-7365. So prize is hanging out there on that line, so don't be afraid to use it. But I tell you, I've got a lot of stuff to share tonight with you. It's been an interesting couple of days, obviously because of Curiosity landing on Mars. Boy, that was exciting last night, and then of a big hacking discussion that's going on. We'll talk about that in detail tonight. But of course, we're up on the live audio stream as well. So the stream is running 24/7. So if you miss the show, don't forget you can listen in while you're at work or mobile. Of course, downloading the show guarantees that you have the basically subscribing to the show guarantees that you'll always have it with you. We're playing the latest shows on the live streamcast stream. So that's available. And of course, don't forget Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV, Google TV. And we've seen an uptick in the number of you coming in via Roku and on Google TV. So it must be more people are getting those devices. But definitely saw an uptick in viewership on those for those of you that are tuning in to check the video out. But I tell you, this show would not be possible without our sponsors. And of course, we want to thank one of our main sponsors here of the show. We want to thank GoDaddy.com. for being a sponsor. Of course, we got a great deal for you this month. As a matter of fact, we've always got a great deal for you. And, you know, we're going to be tweeting out some codes this month, and we're going to be sharing some stuff. So keep your eye on the feed for that as well. And of course, you can always find all our promo codes at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. But I tell you, I've got a great promo for you where you can save 20% off your order over there. And what I found out was this working on domains. This is working on a whole variety of different products and services. I haven't found anything that it did not discount already, but you have to kind of mix and match. You know, if you're picking up like a hosting account, use the code. And then if you're picking up some domains, now some non.coms, use the code. That'll save you some money. Of course, I've got all my codes over at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. So mix and match the codes. And sometimes you save more money by doing two orders and using different codes each order. But definitely check that out. And the link is, of course, up in the show notes. Again, don't forget all my promo codes are available on the website. Free to save money. Share them with your friends, family members, people that you know. And that helps the show in a big way here. And we want to thank those of you that continue to sponsor your sponsor, or continue to support the show, the support of our sponsors here at GNC. Let me tell you, I just about had to call an ambulance tonight. One of the reasons why, I got my electricity bill. Oh my God. It's the biggest one I have ever received. And matter of fact, it was so big, I don't even want my wife to see it because she will like super freak out. I mean, there's something going on. And I'm going to get my kilowatt meter out and I'm going to be plugged into every plug that has something in it and find out where the heck. I know we're paying 38 cents a kilowatt, but oh my goodness is all I could say. So we need your support. Definitely support the sponsors. It is greatly appreciated. But also one thing that had, oh, let me adjust the camera there. That's real professional for those of you watching the video. One thing tonight is, you know, I've got a junior now in high school, and a typical junior trying to figure out what she's going to do with the rest of her life. One day it's, I want to be an engineer. The next day it's, I want to be a nurse. The next day it's something else. So, you know, it's, there's a common theme around three or four different things. We even talk about potentially going into ROTC in the military. So, you know, the whole gamut of stuff. And so tonight we run a little late because we're having a little dinner table discussion about choices and research and the things that she needs to be doing to prepping for her senior year. And even though it's just school just started here in Honolulu, I want her to get ahead of the power curve. I think she's a little bit behind. So we're trying to encourage that and say, hey, you know, time's clicking here. You need to start making some choices. So hopefully we'll be able to get that on track. And any of you that have kids at this point in the same stage, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a little late to start the show, but for a good cause. Tell you, had a great weekend break. Had a sick kid here on Friday, so basically things were kind of at a standstill. I was dealing with him, but did Saturday morning tech. Of course, that was turned out to be fantastic. For those of you that are subscribed to that, you know, it's really kind of show that's building in process. So I had a lot of fun there. But big event, of course, was last night, was the Curiosity rover landing. And so what I did, I want to talk to you guys just a little bit about that before I get into the meat of the content tonight. But it was kind of I had scheduled a hangout. And it really, these live hangouts are kind of weird because it limits the number of people you can, if you set up an event for a live hangout, it really, there's this whole bunch of stuff that doesn't quite work real well on Google Plus. And what it's, I think the best way to really do a hangout on Google Plus is just to not schedule an event, tell everybody when it's going to be, and then invite people in and not have it tied around event, because it just, it was restricted and people are having trouble. So, but we had a couple of people in, of course, you know, big draw, Ustream was up, NASA.gov. But it was kind of cool to have, you know, some of the Ohana in, and we basically Langley was on. One of our other longtime listeners was on as well. And we just kind of chatted. It was cool, you know, chatting about it. And we're all watching the stream separately. And we're all ad-libbing, you know, to what's happening. And it was a lot of fun. But what an event. And we'll come back to the whole Curiosity story a little later and get into it in in-depth detail. But it was fun doing the hangout. We learned a lot about it, and I learned how to patch in screens and some other stuff. So that was seemed to work out well, and we may be doing this more on Saturday Morning Tech. It's just one of those types of, I guess for a better word, one of those types of applications that just takes a little bit of practice, and it's a different type of production system within that, and a little bit challenging. And I think that go a long ways with the hangouts if they really get it dialed in here. I was live streaming it as well on Geek News Central, and I think everyone's eyes were on what was going on with NASA, as should have been, because it was completely crazy. But let me go ahead and bust out the, you know, our support for our show. And we want to it's summer, you know, and you know, teams and business are going to be working from different locations. And, you know, the main thing is, just because you're away from the office, it doesn't mean that business stops. Business has to continue. You have to continue to pick up new clients. You have to do pitches, all the things that go into basically building revenue. And that's one of the reasons why I recommend GoToMeeting. You know, you can meet online with clients and colleagues really from anywhere. And GoToMeeting by Citrix allows you to collaborate on files and plans online. And with HD Faces, you just need that webcam. And I can, you know, my webcam sits right here. And it's right next to the big camera. It sits right here on the, you know, right here in front of me. It's always hooked up. And, you know, with this HD Faces, you know, in a webcam, you can turn your online meetings into a group HD video conference. And it just works. And matter of fact, it works a lot better than a lot of other things out there. I can tell you that. It just, you know, and it just goes to tell, you know, we did this Hangout thing and it didn't work. It wasn't collaborative. It did not go well. And that's one thing I can count on with Citrix GoToMeeting is all I have to do is click start. You send the invite out, and man, it's just like, as a matter of fact, you can do the same thing at the same time. I can start the meeting and send the invite, and people can join with their iPad, with their Android. They can join with their computer, and I'm guaranteed that I'm never going to have this hiccup in a late meeting. It's going to start. It's going to work. So you can connect anywhere, whether you're vacation, beach, park, with the kids, in the backyard. So you guys know I love GoToMeeting. And it gives me the flexibility to meet wherever, whenever. And it basically, it enhances your communications in a big way. So work smarter this summer with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. As a listener of the show, you can try it free for 30 days. Don't wait. This is a special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. It's real easy. Let me just bring up the website. You go over to GoToMeeting.com. You click on the Try It Free button. It's the orange button right on the website. When you get to the next page, you enter some info and you be sure to use the promo code podcast. And that saves you, they get you that 30-day code, a 30-day demo. And matter of fact, there it is. There's instructions on how to do it on the screen. I'll leave that up for a little bit here for those of you that are watching so that you have the full verbatim details there. But again, GoToMeeting.com, click the try free button and use the promo code podcast. All right, let me go ahead here and get into the full-blown content for the show. And let me look and see what I've got in the stack here. And make sure I'm on page one. A couple of things I want to go into before I talk about the NASA event is there was an article today over on Read Write Web by Richard McManus. And I think he's written a couple of articles on podcasting. You know, when podcasting started in the summer of 2003, it was largely about freedom and the ability for content creators like myself to be able to put content online in a way that was easily consumable by folks. And, you know, this show started in October of 2004, and it was exhilarating, and it's still exhilarating today, that I'm able to have a platform that I'm able to share my ideas, thoughts, and processes and, you know, and gain an audience that we have that follows along and participates in the show. And at the same time, I'm able to say what I feel. And there's thousands, tens of thousands of other content creators out there from that point that have been able to come online and make content. And, you know, this guy's complaint was that it's been taken over, podcasting has been taken over by the major media. Well, they understood the power of taking content with them. You know, the ESPN, BBC, NPR, all those groups have understood that content, people are walking around with content. Now, in the early days, you know, our number one goal was to get the media from, you know, our websites into your mobile device so you could, you know, walk around with it. And, you know, connectivity wasn't as good then as it is now. So now when people are listening to podcasts, oftentimes they are coming straight to the website via their phone, or they have just loaded it up in the player and they basically play it real time. Some people call it streaming, but you're still getting a progressive download and it's not necessarily live. Some people are still subscribing and having it downloaded and synced to their device. You know, there's over 100 different devices today that are able to and do are being used to listen to podcasts. And, you know, podcasting was never meant to be the end of radio. I think we all hoped it would have been in the early days. It was kind of this theme that we were always going on. But, you know, radio stations still, you know, public radio stations are still doing fundraising drives. The public radio stations are still giving you a commercial, a break every 15 minutes with 3 to 5 minutes of commercials. And I'll talk more about commercials even online as compared to this medium. You know, you guys know I do 2 ads for about 75 minutes worth of show. And, you know, so by maybe a total of 5 minutes to do two ads. But, you know, that pays the bills here. And I understand why radio stations have to have, you know, 10 ads an hour. Their bills are much higher. They have a transmitter and everything else. And my transmitter is basically an upload to the internet and you guys download it. So gatekeepers are people like Time Warner, Comcast, Apple. There's lots of gatekeepers out there. And the gatekeepers want to keep the gates up. And what podcasting was we were able to get access to distribution channels for anyone that wants it. You look at, I talk about in the show, when I start the show, that my show is be able to be heard on the Roku, Boxy, Samsung Smart TV, Google TV, the set-top boxes, and then, you know, every device imaginable, the web, any place you can get to me digitally. The only difference is I'm not on a terrestrial broadcast. And even today, I'm streaming the show, so it's available on a repeat basis 24/7, so you can actually come in with a Streamcast or come in with a Winamp or one of those other, and click on the playlist, and you can listen to it that way. So we've made it available to almost every way conceivable for you to listen to the content. And that's what it was about, you know. And it also gave us the freedom that I was able to fill my device with content that I wanted to listen to. And I still do today. You know, I have a playlist of shows that I download and listen to on a weekly basis. And I add content all the time to try to find new stuff. And the main thing is I'm filling my brain with content that I wanted to. And this is the freedom we've had. So when this guy says that the space has been taken over by mainstream media, absolutely, because they understood the power of it, you know. And, you know, there, I think we know pretty close how many people in the United States are listening to this kind of media as a whole. You know, at Rob Weiss, we're tracking literally millions of people that are listening to content. And his thing was, well, there's no, you know, there's no Larry King in the podcasting world. Well, I would disagree. There are tens of thousands of Larry Kings in very niche, or not even maybe niche, content genres, because every person connects with people differently. There are some people on TV, on the televisions that I cannot stand. And I'm sure there are some people that when they listen to this show, stand me and they move on. But thank goodness there's, you know, there's 500 other choices for them. And at the same time, people come in and they connect with this show and you guys connect with me. And we have this great relationship and I love creating content for you. So that's what it's about. There's tens of thousands of Larry Kings. And I'm not even going to try to, you know, say that I have the same reach as a Larry King. That's not true. But my own way I do. And some people say, well, some shows are smaller, it's real small. Why would people want to do a small podcast when they're only reaching 100 people? And the comment I always have come back to from the very early days is how many people get to talk to 100 people a day? How many people get to talk to 10,000 people a day? How many people get to talk to 125,000 people twice a week? You know, how many people get to talk to 250,000 people twice a week? And there's a lot of podcasters that are reaching significant numbers each week, and they're doing their own content in their own way, and those people that are listening to those shows connect. So that's the main thing that this whole space has been always about, is freedom of choice, right? And that Todd here in Hawaii can do a show while the rest of the country's sleeping and you guys will wake up in the morning and listen to this show. Whereas someone in Israel or someone in the West Bank or someone in Africa or someone in Russia or someone in Afghanistan, I don't know if there's any podcasters in Afghanistan, but people in Iran or wherever, they can do a show. They can put it up on the internet. They can make it available. We've been doing this for a millennia, really, for as long as the internet's been around. The main difference is the distribution, being able to automatically get it and listen to it. That's the power that this media has brought to the space. And that's why I love it. And that's why I continue to do this show and be able to reach tens of thousands of people. And sometimes I have your attention more than I have, you know, sometimes the attention spans and the audience goes up and down, but that's just the way shows are these days. So I encourage Mr. McManus to call me. And I will share with him some very detailed statistics on what's happening in the new media space. You know, I can really dig in deep because that's what we do. We dig in deep on numbers, and I can give some really overall fantastic stats and about content creators like me and not mainstream media. We have mainstream companies that we have our stats, but we generally have that information kind of split down the middle. It's like a difference between church and state because we want to see what the difference is on the deltas. So anyway, enough on that. Let's get into the event that last night is going to shape science for the next couple of years here. The Curiosity landing was just simply incredible. The science team at NASA, they have to be just absolutely congratulated. They just nailed this baby. I mean, everything that could go wrong did not. You know, I had heard all the briefings. I had heard all the scientists talk about, we're going to lose connection. We're going to, you know, we may not get any pictures back. The MRO may not be able to get something. You know, all the different things that could went wrong didn't. Everything worked. And it worked so well. I mean, it worked so well that the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter was able to get an image of the actual rover about 2 miles before landing, still attached to the parachute and the capsule on the way down. Simply incredible. They actually got a picture of the heat shield after they punched it off. And they have a video of 300 frames of the last, like, 2 minutes of the landing. And they actually show it going down to the ground. And then the sky crane, you can't see the sky crane fly off, but you see this dust release. It's, I mean, just amazing. And we knew it was getting exciting because they said Opportunity has made its maneuver. We got really strong signal, you know, and in the 7 minutes of terror turned out to be 7 minutes of just fantastic information. And what I'm going to do is I recorded the whole event. And I'll probably take that 7 minutes of what was supposed to be 7 minutes of terror and put it in the show tonight. I'll try to get it and I'll figure out how I'm going to cut it in. Maybe I'll put it at the end. And if you did not get to see that segment or listen to that segment, you're going to have to, because it was unlike anything I've ever seen in a landing. And, you know, as a kid, I do not remember the Apollo missions. I don't remember going to the moon. I remember space shuttle launches. I remember us augering a few devices into Mars. I remember the two previous rovers that went in, but this was just such a different vibe because I think they thought that they were had about a 50-50 chance of putting this thing on the planet. And when that first picture came back and basically had dirt on the lens, basically they had a lens that was basically protecting the camera. When that first picture came in, I was like, this thing is not upside down. It's upright. There's no skid marks. This thing didn't get drug all over the place. I mean, it set it down so gently. I was listening to the vertical and horizontal speeds, and it was just like they put it down like a feather. And the first high-res image has come out, and this came from the front Hascam. And I have all these linked up in the show notes. I'm sure you've seen these. If you haven't seen them, you know, they're all over the news. And just and this isn't even, this is just from, they're not even good camera. These are like the terrain avoidance stuff. So just incredible stuff. I mean, it really was. And I hope many of you stayed up for the landing. And I hope that, you know, this is like old news to you. But I want to share with you this Curiosity's descent. And we'll probably get this thing banned from YouTube, but I just gotta play this, and it's about a minute long, and I'll full screen it, and I'll try to describe for those of you that are listening what we're seeing here. So, essentially, what they did was there was a camera inside the rover that took 200 and some thumbnails, almost 297 frames. And this was about 297 frames in the last 2.5 minutes of descent, condensed into about 50 seconds. So you see the heat shield drop away. You see the rover make a sharp maneuver, some sort of an alignment maneuver. And then you can see that we're starting to straighten up. And the land is coming up at just an incredible rate. And you're thinking to yourself, when is this, you know, are we going to, where's the transition going to happen? And then all of a sudden, you see the jets, the exhaust from the actual sky crane kick in, and you see it hovering, and then you see the rover lowering, and then you see the actual, you actually see the wheel come down and settle on the ground. And wow. I hope that they got a better video of that and just haven't been able to uplink it yet, where it's actually video and not frames. But apparently, and I'll talk about this just a little bit, there's been some information that has come out that talks about really what is on board. You know, and you think about the computer that you have, or think about the power you have in your iPhone, but the iPhone is literally 4 times as more powerful as the Curiosity rover processor. So what you've got is the Curiosity rover CPU is a 200 megahertz processor. It's got 256 megabytes of RAM, and it's got a 2D. It has the iPhone has an 800 megahertz CPU, 512 megabytes of RAM, and 64 gigs of solid state memory. So it's pretty incredible that they're able to do everything that they're going to do with Curiosity with that processor. Now, they do have to do a software upgrade. All this stuff is in there right now has been designed for get us on the ground. Let's get the you know, sensors deployed. So they are going to have to do some upgrades to the software. And that is going to be a big event that has to happen here in the near future. And it's basically they're going to reflash and reboot the rover to basically get it so that it can be in mission mode, be on land mode instead of being in space mode. So I don't understand why they just didn't stick another SSD on there or two. You know, SSD, I'm sure, well, you think about this thing's been in development for 8 years. So, you know, they build it for, you know, something that would just work. Now, there is some contradictory specs on the web right now, because they said that the actual processor is a BAE RAD 750, which is a 750 megahertz power PC CPU. So that's a little bit different than what's been reported on some other sites. But anyway, the rover is now transmitting data back at 40 megabits per second to Earth when it can get an uplink to MRO. And they're going to be increasing the speed as they get the high gain antenna up and everything else. So, you know, one thing we have to worry about is power, because we've got a nuclear reactor essentially on the ground there. It's not necessarily a nuclear reactor, but it's definitely generating electricity through radiation and isotopes. I don't know exactly how that works, but very cool stuff. We don't have to worry about being on solar. But a small SUV is on Mars. And I look forward to seeing the science come out. Now, kind of on a funny notice, NASA put up a video from the seven, basically when they were getting ready to land and some other stuff. And basically the video was blocked. they got taken. This video contains content from Scripps Local News, who has blocked it on copyright grounds. So there was a DMCA on this, a bogus DMCA takedown, and it was in one of those automated systems. So someone else had put up some content and copyrighted it. But you remember, all NASA stuff is open source. And I was really be real careful. I didn't want to put up a whole bunch of video with a bunch of NASA video in it. I was trying to be careful and respect all that stuff, even though it's open source. But anyway, so the video's back up, but a little bit of egg on YouTube's face for blocking the video. But there's going to be lots of stuff going on. There's all kinds of scientific instruments, 10 to be exact. This thing has a total mass 15 times larger than science payloads from a previous Mars rover Spirit and Opportunity. Of course, we know that this rover has, right now they're saying everything is working good. And this thing's got a laser on board, so they can able to do all kinds of great stuff. And, here's an interesting tidbit on the actual power supply. The rover's power source is a thermonuclear electric generator that produces electricity from the heat of plutonium-238's radioactive decay. Longer living and more reliable than solar power, the thermonuclear generator can provide us with power for at least a full year on Mars, 687 days on Earth, and pumps warm fluids through the rover to keep it at the right operating temperature. I think it's going to be able to operate a lot longer than that. A couple of weeks of checkout before they start moving, and we'll see what happens. But pretty exciting stuff. And there's lots of stuff going on the JPL site, NASA TV, and so forth. All those links will be up in the show notes. All right, I'm going to really shift right here on this next story. And this one here is probably, this story is probably one of the most important stories I'm going to pass to you that has happened. And I want you just to listen up here. This is incredible. Now, for a long time, I've been telling you guys, and this is just a little preliminary information, to back up your computers locally. Try to back up your computer if you can afford to in the cloud with a program like Carbonite, or use Amazon S3. There's lots of different ways to back up in the cloud. Mac users, you automatically get iCloud, but it's not enough. You need a local backup as well. And you need to make sure that you're running Time Machine, so it's your Mac users, on a regular basis. Make sure that Time Machine is, every day is dropping stuff. Make sure that all your machines are, check them. Make sure there's good backups in your, in your local storage. Because if you don't, you're going to end up having a situation, or could have a situation happen, like a gentleman by the names of Matt Honan. Matt had not backed up his MacBook for over a year locally. He had a brand new daughter's pictures in it that are probably gone forever. And he was hacked in a big way. And how he was hacked is pretty incredible. Now, you think about getting hacked, you think someone's going to get in your computer, they're going to mess around, and do something to your computer, doesn't boot, you recover it. You know, there's all kinds of things that can happen when someone hacks your computer. But what would you think if within an hour, your mobile phone, your iPhone, your iPad, and your laptop, and your local email, and your Gmail account were all deleted and erased just within an hour? Now, what happened to this guy was his Google account was taken over and deleted. Next, his Twitter account was compromised and used as a platform to broadcast racist and homophobic messages. And worst of all, his Apple ID account was broken into, and hackers used it to remotely erase all the data on his iPhone, iPad, and MacBook. He says, it was my fault. He says all the devices were daisy chained together. He said, essentially what happened was is someone got into his Amazon account. He says, getting into Amazon let my hackers get into my Apple ID account, which helped them get into Gmail, which gave them access to Twitter. He said, had I used two-factor authentication, which I am now running on both my email accounts, he said, had I used two-factor authentication for my Google account, it's possible that none of this would have ever happened. Because he says these hackers' goal was ultimately to take over his Twitter account and wreak havoc, not necessarily jack his computers up. He also said, had he been regularly backing up the data on his MacBook, he wouldn't have to worry about losing more than a year's worth of photos covering the entire last lifespan of his daughter, or documents and emails that had stored in no other location. Now, what are the pictures that are most precious to you as parents? Your baby pictures, right? And every kid wants to see their baby pictures. You lose the baby pictures, folks, you're going to get the scorn of your wife like it is nobody's business. I mean, I'm going to tell you, lose the pictures, fellas, and see what happens. I'm just warning you. All right, you need to think about this. Lose the baby pictures, right? Let's not worry about the other. Lose the baby pictures and see how your life turns into a living hell. So imagine what this guy's going through. He lost the baby pictures, right? He says, those security lapses are my fault, and I deeply, deeply regret them. This guy's mourning. He's in a state of shock. He has lost this digital. He don't care about the documents, the pictures. So this isn't just him, okay? So I want you to really pay attention. He says what happened to him exposes vital security flaws in several customer service systems, most notably Apple's and Amazon's. Apple tech support gave the hackers access to my iCloud. Amazon tech support gave them the ability to see a piece of information, a partial credit card number that Apple used to release information. He says, in short, the very four digits that Amazon considers unimportant enough to display in the clear on the web are precisely the same ones that Apple considers secure enough to perform identity verification. He says the disconnect exposed flaws in data management policies endemic to the entire technology industry and points to a looming nightmare as we enter the era of cloud computing. So I'm going to give you some advice right off the bat. Change your credit card on your Apple iCloud account to another credit card than what you have on Amazon. Okay, do that immediately, or vice versa. Change your Amazon credit card to make them different. First and foremost, okay? Use two different credit cards on those two different services. He says, hey, if you're not cloud compute connected, you're going to be soon. He says, Apple's working hard to get all of its customers to iCloud. Google's entire operating system is cloud-based. And Windows 8, the most cloud-centric operating system yet, will hit desktops by the tens of millions this fall. He realized something was wrong about 5 p.m. on Friday when his phone went to work. And when he went down to his computer and checked it, the screen displayed a four-digit PIN. He said, I don't have a four-digit PIN. So apparently what happened was that this is a combination of things. This guy had a domain name. The hacker looked up the who is information on his domain name, got his name, his address of his house, all that information. And then he used that information to basically get, let me read here. At 4:43, according to Apple tech support, someone called Apple Care claiming to be me. Apple said the caller reported they couldn't get into his email, his .me email, which is, of course, my .me email. In response, Apple issued a temporary password. It did this despite the caller's inability to answer security questions I had set up. And it did this after the hacker supplied only two pieces of information that anyone with an internet connection and a phone can answer. He says at 4:50 p.m., a password reset confirmation arrived in my inbox. I didn't really use my .me email and rarely checked it. But even if I did, I might not have noticed the message because the hackers immediately sent it to the trash. Then they're able to follow the link in that email to permanently reset my Apple ID. A Gmail password recovery email arrived in my .me mailbox 2 minutes later. Another email arrived notifying me that my Google account password had changed. At 5:02, they reset my password, my Twitter password. At 5 p.m., they use the iCloud Find My tool to remotely wipe my iPhone. At 5:01, they remotely wipe my iPad. At 5:05, they remotely wipe my MacBook. Around this time, they deleted my Google account at 5:10. I placed the call to AppleCare at 5:12. The attacker posted a message to my account on Twitter taking credit for the hack. So he spent some time talking with AppleCare. They were trying to validate him and finally were able to. But ultimately, they were able to get in. Let me go into a little further in the story here. They ultimately were able to get in because of this cross-confirmation stuff. The hacker actually talked to him. And he said, hey, if you had set up the two-factor authentication on Google Gmail, we would have never got in. Because what this double authentication does is basically when you try to log into Gmail, it sends a password to your mobile device. And you have to enter that in to get into the account. If you don't have that, you don't get in. So even if they wiped his phone, they still wouldn't have got into his Gmail account. So let me get into how this tied into Amazon. Let me find, there's a lot more information on this. I'm missing part of the story here. The Amazon part is important. Let me go next here. So basically what was going on there was since they got his address, okay, off his domain name and a contact, and basically they figured out what his email address was, they are able to see the four digits that Amazon considers. Basically they gave him that information and they used those four digits and his address to get his Apple ID reset. So they had a little information on this guy, and it was not like he didn't have a non-public email address. So this is what happens when trying to get a credit card number. And it basically takes advantage of the company's back end. And this is how it works on Amazon. First, you call Amazon, tell them you're the account holder and want to add a credit card number to your account. At that point, all you need is the name on the account and an associated email address. And the billing address. Amazon then allows you to input a new credit card. Wired used a bogus credit card number from a website that generates fake card numbers that conform with industry published self-check algorithm. Then you hang up. Next, you call back and tell Amazon that you lost access to your account. Upon providing a name, billing address, and the new credit card number you gave the company on the prior call, Amazon will allow you to add a new email address to the account. From there, you go to the Amazon website and send a password reset to the new email account. So the key here is Amazon allows you to add a credit card. And again, all you need is the name of the account, associated email address, and the billing address. Not hard to get. Your pizza guy could do this. Pizza guy comes to your house, takes your credit card. He has your mailing address. He probably's got your email address from the inside the Pizza Hut delivery system. And boom, he doesn't even have to call. So this is big. So here's what I've done, and here's what you should do. And I want you to go and read this article in its entirety. And go through this whole process this guy went through. Because if you don't, you're not going to understand how easy it was for some to social engineer and get into this guy's account. and it used information from one service against another, and then supposedly and they did this a couple times with Apple today, and Apple failed both times on getting information for setting it, resetting a password. Because guess what? I've done it. I've been on travel. Oh man, I'm on travel. Give them the old sob story, right? I don't remember what my password is. Here's my billing address. Here's my email. I can't remember what I set up for security word. That was years ago. I don't remember that information. You can BS your way through, right? I've done it because I've actually forgot that stuff. So here's what you need to really pay attention to and what you have to pay attention about when you're actually out there. Number one, be smart about passwords and security questions. And I was going through and resetting security questions today, and I'm like, man, if I use that one, someone could look that up on Google, and they're going to know that answer. When possible, encrypt. Use two-factor authentication. Now, I use a couple of different services. I actually ordered today some fobs that have a two-factor authentication. It gives you a number, and you put it in, and within it's good for like 30 seconds. And then there's another application I loaded on my iPhone, and it's called Google Authenticate. And let's see if I can find it. And it helps you authenticate. It's called Authenticator. And Google Authenticate generates verification codes. It provides additional security when signing in. And to use Google Authenticator, you must first add an account by pressing plus. So you just add your account, and you're in. And you have to set it up. And then once it is, it'll create a code for you on your iPhone. It's good for 30 seconds. If you need it, back it up. Now, delete stuff when you're done as well. And don't be a dummy. You know, when you're online, use antivirus software to help prevent malware, such as keystroke loggers. Keep your Wi-Fi network locked down. And don't even broadcast it if you don't have to. Don't share. If you do share cloud services with other people, such as family members, you know, if you have a device that belongs to your kids, set up your credentials for reasons like you set them up with their own account, okay? To prevent accidental exposure of your own personal data. Here's something I'm looking at. Do you use the same email and password as your credentials for more than one service? And some Dropbox users got hammered because they use the same email and same password. Don't use the same credentials for iCloud and iTunes. And you're thinking, wow, that's going to be a pain. Do you use the same cloud-based email account as your password recovery contact address for more than one service? Do you have them all sent to the same email address? And here's what I'm thinking about doing. I'm thinking about setting up a super secret email account that all the password resets go to, and that I'll never use that or publicize that anywhere. That's one of the things I'm considering doing. How hard is it to guess or research your answer you choose for security questions? So pay attention, folks, because this thing could happen to any of us. It could have been me. You know, they could have social engineered my account. It's scary. It really is. And Apple has responded. They basically, Apple Tech, let me find the response from Apple. Apple takes customer privacy seriously and requires multiple forms of verification before resetting an Apple password. Apple spokesperson Natalie Karras told Wired, where Hona now works. In this particular case, the customer data was compromised by a person who had acquired personal information about the customer. In addition, we found that our own internal policies were not followed completely. We are reviewing all of our processes for resetting account passwords to ensure our customers' data is protected. But Wired called in today a couple of times and was able to gain access to other accounts. Through this same flawed process, that this other person was able to do so. Says, ultimately, all you need in addition to someone's email address are these two easily acquired pieces of information, a billing address and the last four digits of a credit card on file, he wrote. Holy smacks. And he got the four-digit credit card from Amazon. This is amazing. It really is. Does it scare you? You think about, I think about all the places I have accounts and the reset password is basically sent. Oh my goodness. I'm freaking out. If you're not freaking out, then you really need to read the article. I'm telling you, this is the most important thing you'll read all year. The two-factor authentication is a pain. Absolute pain. I'm going to tell you. But nothing is more painful than having a machine wiped. And I know those of you that are on Windows machines say, it's not affecting me. But it could be you soon. All right. Let's switch gears here. Boy, I'm not even a quarter of the way through my stuff tonight. Hey, Spitballs, welcome to, I see you just jumped on. And what do you think about the whole security issue with this guy? We didn't get a chance to talk about it last night. All right, YouTube app removed from iOS 6, but not iOS 5 and older. Google's working on a standalone version of the YouTube app. So the next iOS version, you will not get a YouTube app default load. Google Chrome is claiming 1/3 of global browser share, according to StatCounter. They're saying that their percentage has grown to over 33%. It's not surprising. Apple TV Software Beta 4 released developers addressing some issues. So nothing on apps yet. But there's been an update to the iOS 6 for Apple TV. Pretty cool. In a more depressing note, you know, I thought, okay, if I don't like this new Windows 8 Metro thing, that I would just disable it and boot into a normal screen. Well, it appears Windows 8 may not let you boot to the desktop and demands you accept Metro. Of course, they're not supposed to use that word anymore. So I want to go straight to my desktop, but apparently they're trying to disable that. Someone will find a hack to get that re-enabled. Yeah, you know, Spitballs, I've had my share of credit card stuff go wrong. I've had, he says, hey, Todd, you have to be careful. Anytime you use your credit card, had a waiter grab my number on a business trip once. Well, I've had two credit cards this year, that I've had, be used inappropriately. Someone was buying groceries in Canada and someone was buying gas in LA, two different numbers. So, you know, that's, I really think that as you travel and you give your credit card out, people are just making copies of it. I think, you know, times are tough. People are financially desperate. So people that are a little bit, prone to doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing, do it and, sell your information off. And then someone else ends up with some groceries on you. This is one of the reasons why I tell people now, and one thing I've instructed my wife to do, we no longer use a share check card. And I know many of you probably do. It's convenient because, boom, it's just out of your account. But if they start using your share check account, they can empty your basically checking account. So now on using Visa, I only use a regular Visa card. I never use a Visa card that's tied to a checking account. The only time I use a share check card is if I actually go to the bank that I have an account with and I want to make a withdrawal. That's the only time I use the share check card. So if you're using a share check card, you really need to think about, if you have a regular credit card, I encourage you to switch to the regular type of credit card, or standard credit card. Just pay that bill every month when you get it. Don't spend the money in your checking account. If you get into a rhythm and do that every month, you'll be good. You know, maybe cash is a way too. All right, I want to talk about my experience and watching the NBC Olympics online. I had forgot what my Time Warner Cable username was. And turns out I never had one in this new service they had set up. So I spent like 20 minutes on hold for nothing. And got in. And basically, you know, I'd started this before. Kids had been watching some. So I finally decided to watch some stuff on NBCOlympics.com. And because, you know, I had a kind of a kickback weekend and I wanted to watch certain stuff. So the first thing is immediately go to an event, 30-second pre-roll. Okay, that's cool. 30-second pre-roll. Got into an event. There's no commentary. None. I mean, it's just the event. There's no one talking about it. Who's playing? I didn't even recognize any of the people. So I kind of backed out of that and went to another event. And the next thing I went into, there was at least someone making commentary and talking about the event. But every time they had any opportunity whatsoever to throw an ad in, they dropped one. And this is insane. But there was obviously someone there ready on the switch. But I swear, and I think I counted 12 commercials, anywhere from 15 to 30 seconds within like the first 20 minutes of watching the event. So, you know, here we go. Like, you know, like they would like pause because the guy had to pick his nose. Boom, an ad run. Change the side of courts for tennis. Boom, run an ad. Call a break in boxing because the mouthpiece needed to be washed out. Boom, break for an ad. And I'm just like, this is worse than TV. And I'm like, why? Why? Is it that expensive? I mean, I wanted to throw up. You're paying these guys on these cable bills outrageous money. Outrageous money. You have to go through this process to qualify to go on NBCOlympics.com. And then they add you to death. And some of the stuff they don't even have commentary on. There's not even some guy there. At least in a boxing, they had this guy's like, yeah, they should be teaching her to. He was like criticizing the coaches. And I don't know where they got this guy. But just don't get it. I don't. Now, BBC's being praised big time. They're being praised on their coverage, on what they've done. And talking about everything that's been accomplished. So they basically added a bunch of channels and lots of streams. So 17 million people have used the BBC Red button to watch the extra streams that they put on. And that means about a quarter of the UK population has delved beyond the primary linear TV toward narrowcast live sports. And it didn't matter what they were carrying. They were carrying a whole bunch of different stuff. But every one of the 24 channels has seen at least 100,000 users at some point, according to BBC Sports. And although the sheer breadth of simultaneous options might have diluted the audience for reach, it appears to have held steady. And this was bigger than the web. So they've devoted some amazing blanket coverage to the Olympics. Three of the UK's primary linear channels, BBC 1, 2, and 3, have all but shelved their daytime and evening schedule in place of live events, analysis, interviews, highlights, and magazine features. There may be enough material being pumped out of these core channels to satisfy anyone. They got the 24-hour streams, of course. And the UK mobile viewing is matching the United States. So BBC has done a super job on how narrowcasting can go large. And, of course, they're right there at the same time zone, so you don't have to worry about a six-hour tape delay. All right, I got to share this with you. The FDA has approved ingestible sensors that are powered by stomach juices. It's called the Ingestion Event Marker, It's made by Proteus Digital Health Incorporated. It's been available in Europe since 2011. And it's basically turns out to be extremely helpful for people who have trouble remembering to take their medication. It's a tiny sensor, the size of a grain of sand, which you ingest either embedded in a pill or any other consumable. It's then powered by the acid in your stomach, and it communicates with the outside world through a patch that's applied to the skin on your belly. It also exerted when you, well, you know, the normal way. It can tell if you've taken your meds. It transmits information about other physiological behaviors, metrics including heart rate, body position, and activity. Then the information can be sent to a mobile phone app to the patient. And with a patient's permission, their medical caregivers. So what this thing is basically spying on you. And all you got to do is take the tablet. And no word on cost, but you take the little green pill. And it tracks everything you're doing. They'll be putting in our food next. That's where it's going to go. It's going to be in our food. You guys know about Richard O'Dwyer. He's in the UK. They're trying to extradite him to the United States. Well, there's been some documents that have been found by the MPA, and basically it comes up their plan and what they're going to do to work on getting this guy extradited, and talks about their game plan, and they're having a coordinated effort to focus more on the criminal activity involved in the operation of TV Shack and other similar linking sites, and they're trying to make it so this guy looks worse than he is. And so anyway, it's they got a whole set of talking points here. And they say that how the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement sees this site, how this site had a simple purpose, copyright, all kinds of, you know, basically talking points and how you're supposed to talk to the press or anyone else about for a media interview when it comes to this individual. So they're, you know, they got this this plan. And I guess that's the way things work these days. I remember when Apollo 13 had issues. Of course, if everyone's seen the movie Apollo 13, well, it appears, and there's some news coming out, that it appears that flight director Gene Kranz ordered a slingshot around the moon, and that story stayed that way for 40 years until this weekend when an ex-NASA press secretary came forward and said an unnamed MIT grad student came up with the idea to slingshot the spacecraft around the moon. NASA reportedly buried his involvement at the last minute when he discovered that he was a long-haired, bearded hippie type. Of course, you know, in those days, the NASA guys were all clean-shaven, military-style haircuts, white shirts with a black tie, you know, the whole NASA image. And so they're trying to find this guy, find out if he's the real deal, if the story has any legs. So, it turns out that a hippie scientist got the Apollo 13 guys back. Cool, yeah? It appears that AT&T and Verizon are not so happy about Apple iPhone. They are, they're having concerns about revenue. And so to hear the carriers tell it, the iPhone is apparently this major inhibitor of profits. And because they were only generating wireless profits in the range of 38 to 42%. And so they've been implementing a lot of other types of stuff about data caps, increasing fees for device upgrades and so forth. And they've been able to increase the margin to 45% in quarter two. So that makes you go, doesn't it? All right, let me go ahead here and hit the next article. And when I get these, basically my bank sends me text messages when I have threshold limits set in my accounts that basically tell me when and where and how. Oh, that's interesting. Okay. ATM fee. All right. So who took money out on the ATM? I know that I did earlier. Let's see how long this actually, if they're actually just finally reporting this. So this just irritates me. So I get a text just now. So this morning, literally at noon, That was, what time is it here? 9 o'clock. 9 hours ago, I withdrew some money out of an ATM. And I'm just getting the notification now on my iPhone because it busted my threshold on, I say, if it something happens in the account over a certain amount on ATM withdrawals to notify me. So 9 hours. Boy, if someone had been using my card for the past 9 hours, I don't think that was very effective, do you? Crazy. Of course, it was at a non, is it a bank that's not related to my main bank? So maybe that's why the delay. I don't know. All right, moving on to the next topic. Hey, Mac laptop owner reported shortened battery life after Mountain Lion upgrade. That is an issue that's apparently going around for some folks. So keep an eye on that. Have not seen that on any of my Macs. Also, if you're doing payroll, if you're working with payroll with your company, criminals are targeting firms with rogue emails from payroll service providers. So be aware of that. So if you use firms like ADP or Sands to process your payroll, be on the lookout for bogus emails coming in from criminals trying to social engineer you into clicking on a link. Good article on Ars Technica talking about how Senator Dennis, boy, I'm going to pronounce this guy's name incorrectly, Democrat of Ohio, Kucinich. Oh, man, I'm bad. He introduced a bill in Congress on Friday. The purpose was to examine, label, and communicate adverse human biological effects associated with the exposure to electromagnetic fields from cell phones. So in other words, he wants to put a radiation signal on our cell phones. So we'll see what this happens. But his labeling would mandate the disclosure of RF radiation emissions levels, legal limits, and mandatory goals for safe exposure. So basically telling you how much your brain's getting radiated every time you put your phone to your ear. Don't do that. Use a hands-free device. Samsung lawyers forced to, as in the Samsung versus Apple or Apple versus Samsung trial, the Samsung folks were able to question Apple's $75,000 expert who was getting paid up to $400 per hour. And basically, they're asking some very in-depth questions about design. During a lengthy cross-examination, Samsung lawyer Charles Verhoeven focused on the small differences between Apple's design patents and the accused Samsung phones. He said, "It is wider, yes," said Bressler when asked about the slight side margin of the Samsung Infuse 4G. "And yes, the phone margins are wider than the margins described in Apple's D677 patent. Again, this is a level of detail that the ordinary observer wouldn't see." So in other words, we're talking about very small differences. And so they're going on and questioning all these minute details about the design. Can you imagine being the juror on that? I would just be like, want to stand up and scream and say, "You guys, idiots." But that's what they're facing right now. For those of you that are aviation enthusiasts, I've got a very cool article on lasers being used in place of PTOT tubes. And for those of you that don't know what that means, don't worry, but the link will be up in the show notes for those that do. Google has slapped $100 million golden handcuff on Wildfire. Basically, they acquired Wildfire for $350 million, but they've included $100 million in earnouts and retention bonuses to try to keep the team together. So that's a heck of a amount of money to be able to be put out there as a potential bonus just to stay with the company. So again, this is about an acquisition hire where they're trying to acquire help. And very interesting. $100 million on the table for employees to stick around. I got to share this with you. Windows 8 packaging. I'm sorry, but Microsoft needs to go and pay someone at Apple a lot of money to defect and come up with their Windows 8 packaging. Could it be any more boring? It's got Windows 8 at the top, Windows 8 Pro, and it shows two Metro squares in the middle of the box with the Microsoft logo on with the Microsoft at the bottom left. Boring. This is like, are they trying to go for a minimalistic design? You've got this Metro design. It's got all this fantastic stuff. Why didn't they just make the box look like something cool? They could have, you know, if it would have been, okay, I'm not a designer, but here's my idea for a box for Windows 8. You take the front of it and you make it Metro style and you put in the windows, all the features, you put little logos on there and you make it look like that instead of this cheesy, weak, boring Microsoft design. They still do not get it. This says boring, not sexy. I'm just appalled. Hey, the Acer CEO has warned Microsoft to think twice about Surface. So an interview in the Financial Times, the chairman and CEO of Acer, JT Wang, warns that the move will be negative for the worldwide ecosystem of computing. He said Acer has told Microsoft to think twice about what it's doing. In other words, don't do it. Giving a little threatening, kind of a little strong language there. He says it will create a huge negative impact for the ecosystem and other brands may take a negative reaction. You know what? He's going to continue to build computers for Windows. It's not going to change. It's not like he can go build Macs. So they want to stay in the computing business. They're going to have to. Too bad. You remember Bloom Energy? Silicon Valley cell maker Bloom Energy says they're halfway there to breaking even and becoming profitable. Of course, 10-year-old Bloom is a prime example of a really capital-intensive clean tech company. They have gotten like nearly $1 billion in funding over its lifetime. But, you know, they're working towards profitability. Halfway there after spending nearly $1 billion. Those of you that are sports fans, I heard this about this site for the first time today, but apparently Turner Broadcasting bought a website Bleacher Report for a huge amount of money, $175 million. I mean, I was like, what? What site is that? I'm honest with you. I never had heard of the site prior to today, and maybe it's just because I'm not a sports guy. But here you have a content farm that has sports information, NFL, CFB, MLB, NBA, NHL, CBB. What is CBB? I don't even know what that is. Soccer, UFC, WWE, Olympics, more. And it's just a site that puts information out about sports. $175 million bought by Turner Broadcasting. Arrow has double DVR storage. So another attack by the Arrow folks in New York City. So now you can get up to 80 hours to select subscribers. Hey, I've never really paid attention to Chinese search engines, but apparently if you get your checkbook out and you talk to some of the administrators of that Baidu, apparently you can delete users' posts for cash. The professional post deleting, as it can be called, is a way of removing negative press and reviews from websites. At least a major problem in China, but cross-referencing a record original post with the deletions of its employees to make has allowed a Baidu to identify culprits. So apparently people were giving them about from $150 to $450 to delete a single forum post and up to $30,000 a year. They were making up to $30,000 a year for what was referenced as a long-term maintenance service. So, wow, you don't like what's being said about you. You just pay these guys and they just remove it. There's an 8-core ARM GPU that may be bringing some pretty cool graphics to your smartphone. So Samsung's Galaxy 3 with its quad-core Mali 400 GPU leads the pack in mobile prettiness. But apparently these upcoming ARM GPUs are scalable to 8 cores, and it could blow the current processors off the map. Iran, I guess, is still trying to quit the internet, but they're delayed. They're having trouble. But they want to leave the internet because it's afraid of America. Iran's telecommunication minister has had enough of all the U.S.-Israeli nonsense. He wants the internet free from Stuxnet, Flame, and all the cyber weapons sure to follow. He says that way Iran can continue to maybe make nuclear weapons in peace while also being free from pesky Western evils like Facebook, porn, YouTube, and Rihanna. No, what he said is he wanted to, the first phase to replace the global internet with a domestic internet is scheduled to be completed within 18 months. Good luck with that. Enjoy yourself. Knock yourself out. Oh, goodness. Hey, Andrew over at Geek News Central put up a pretty good article on this BTR-006 Bluetooth audio receiver. So if you're looking for a way to get audio into your car and it's be non-intrusive. This is kind of a little unit that's kind of cool. Plugs into your radio and basically can transmit. If your radio's not Bluetooth compatible, you basically can transmit to this device and it go into your car. I know my car's got one of those jacks. I've never used it because the radio's also got Bluetooth, so I just do it that way. Also, iPhone 4S has dropped $149 with Sprint. So that's a sign here. From $199 to $149, the price has went down. All right, that's all for the regular content tonight, and I guess I did okay. I hope I didn't bore you too much at the beginning with the security stuff, but I do think it is important. I did have a few emails come in to the show, and I got an email here from Tim. He said, "Hey, Todd, is Samsung ripping off Apple's trademarks? Take a close look at this." He says, "Looks pretty close, I have to admit." So I have this link up in the show notes here. Let me bring this up. And it looks at, it just basically shows different icons. And let me flip the switch here so you guys can see this. So let me see here. You know, here's my issue with this whole thing on icons. You know, with icons, you know, there's only so many ways to draw a telephone. And then, if you look at, they got other things here. Okay, there's the iTunes mark. That looks a little different. Yeah, so, you know, there's some stuff that looks a little bit same. So not a lot of originality here between the two. So, you know, but, you know, it's kind of hard. How do you, actually, you know, everyone's kind of used to the same type of thing. If you want familiarity, you want to be able to, you want some icons to kind of look the same, right? But I guess they don't want that in these patent issues. So thanks for sending that over, Tim. Got an email back from Richard. He said, "Hey, Todd, I emailed you a few weeks ago. You want to know why I'm looking for a good-sized backpack to carry mid or full-size desktop computers? Here's my two reasons. My company constantly recycles computers. They're only a few years old. Core 2, sometimes quad cores, most in good shape, minus the hard drive. Anyone can part them out or take them, but I don't like the look people give me as if I'm stealing. Also, I'm a PC gamer and could use a good backpack to carry my gaming rig to LAN parties at my friend's house. I hope that makes sense, Richard." Rich, you know what you could do is get yourself an oversized gym bag, dude. So you can say, "I got my gym." If you got a gym at work, you know, instead of taking your gym clothes home, you can put in the computer in the gym bag. But I understand why you want to do a backpack, but, still haven't got a response from anybody. You know, one site that I used that was pretty good, where I found my latest bags, where was that? Just search on Google computer bags to see if I can actually find the site that I was using to find. And it shows all the, let me see here. It was a top, actually someone, Google advertising did good computer. That was dumb. Computer bags. Let me research here. See if I can find computer bag. Let me look. Who was it with? Well, of course, now we're not seeing any ads. I got a big one on here from Google, and that's it. Was it eBags that I used? Let me look and see. I get ads from them now all the time. They drive me crazy. Yeah, eBags, I think, was the site. ebags.com. Just do a computer bag search. There's a bunch of companies that sell bags online. They're actually cheaper than going to the store. And you can really find a full selection of bags that way. And they break it down. A lot of them have those little matrices you can use to narrow your search. So definitely check that out. Got an email here from Chris. He says, "Hey, Todd, while checking out the link to the mosquito flamethrower, I ran into another device for taking out pesky insects. This bad boy turns a pinch of salt into ammunition to fire insects using a plastic shotgun." Okay, let's take a look at this. This sounds like something you would not want the kids to play with at home. And salt-firing shotgun offers up a fun way to kill insects. Okay, it's definitely plastic. All right, it looks like they're doing a, you know, come on, shooting insects with salt. Get the fly swatter out. You know, that works pretty effective. I want to thank Aaron for sending me the link to the guy that got hacked hard. I had already seen that, of course. appreciate it. Do want to send Andy, or my good friend in Shanghai, China, sent me a link to Exaggerated Reality. Sent me a link to this. I'll have this up in the show notes for those of you to check it out. Very cool stuff. And what else do I have? I've got another email from Aaron talking about an individual that's a hacker that's left a dev team. Oh, actually, it's one of the teams that has that's been doing jailbreaking of the iPhone. One of the team members has left. So I guess there was a little drama there. So thanks for that link as well, Aaron. All right, folks, this wraps me up. But I'm looking at the time. I'm super long on time tonight, so I'm not going to play the... I'll put together that video of those 7 minutes landing. I'll put it in the special media feed, and that'll be over there, and you can check it out. But we're already an hour 20 on the regular show tonight. It's way too long. Thanks for indulging me, letting me go long and talk about the Curiosity and, of course, the big hack that went on and my concerns for all of you and me. So thanks for being with me. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time. And aloha.